Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is Tuesday, March the 12th, 2019, and this is Ralph Pointer, What's Happening, Blog Talk Radio. And tonight, as usual, we are about enlightenment. We are about fighting metaphysical imperialism. We understand that an anatomy of oppression requires an anatomy of colonialism and imperialism, an anatomy of the American capitalist system. And we recognize that this is a government by murder and that we must resist by any means necessary. With that in mind, our particular theme tonight is the American politic is a cloth woven of patronage and total compromise by the populace. In addition, if they can break away from their meetings, we're hoping to get a report and an update on the Louisiana Angola prison situation. So please stand by, because as soon as they call in, we're going to try and patch them through to our audience. And once again, we are thrilled to turn our mic over after saying welcome back to our usual suspects, Tom, Ann, Larry, Professor Louie. Welcome back. It was a fantastic program last week. We're glad you're back with us again this week. Sister Reva sends her regards. She will not be able to join us, but she's looking forward to being with us the next time we're on. Brother Ralph Poynter, your mic is open.
Thank you, my sister. Ralph Poynter here, and what I believe. The overriding element in every situation or circumstance in a black life is racism. Birth, elementary school, housing, health, food, etc. Black lives have never mattered except during slavery and other circumstances where money is being made by our labors for others. The modern death penalty, 80% black, move lynching indoors. The police, as the army of occupation, have taken lynching outside again. The lynch mob is the racist system, including the courts and the media. And because the lives of our heroes and sheroes who once protected us in our community do not matter to us, the people, our political prisoners are now dying in captivity. They are tortured and isolated. Only armed struggle can recreate our image in our own minds as well as the minds of others. Wake up. Now is the time. Now, this evening, our theme of the American politic is a cloth woven of patronage and total compromise by the populace. What does that mean? Well, we'll give you some examples. Let us begin with New York State in the last election, or the last primary, and that is the presidential primary between Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. In order to deliver the New York Democratic vote for Hillary Clinton, they just blocked out a couple hundred thousand. The number's been high as 350,000 votes, Democratic votes, for Bernie Sanders. And as it turns out, Hillary gets the nod from New York. Now, we talk about voting that is taken away from people all over the world. We talk about gerrymandering. But right here in New York, some Democrat tell me when they heard boo from a Democrat, they lost their right to vote. It does not matter, because with patronage, the clubs dare not say boo. The churches, with their programs, federal programs led or administrated by the Democratic Party. And so who is there to say boo? We are here to speak of this truth, these truths of the American politic. Excuse me. The patronage that flows through America in capitalism and the so-called democracy has always been with us. That's the grease that oils government. But when it gets so bad and so obvious that there is no pushback from the populace, I'm trying to remember what philosopher said, people should not be afraid of government. Government should be afraid of the people. Well, there is no fear of this government, of the people, or the politic. The big lie of democracy has been exposed recently over and over again. Another example. We see that everyone knows that there's a coup going on in Venezuela. Trump said it very clearly, and these were his words. We shouldn't have gone to Iraq. We should have gone to Venezuela. They got the oil. Well, that is outrageous in any for any government to say. But in a government that espouses freedom and democracy and fairness, to say, we're just going to take your stuff. We're going to continue with banana republics, with bananas and oil and everything else or anything else that you have. And what is the result of this? America cannot say the word. Those in government, those in power cannot spell coup when it comes to certain situations. Let's start with the island of Haiti that was under total American and French and Canadian domination until finally the people rose up and forced an opportunity to vote for someone they wanted, Bertrand Aristide. He got 70% of the vote. But the American government and the Marines took him out of office at the point of bayonets. And one of the black Congress people said, "Let's go to Haiti, caucus of congressmen of color." And their answer was, "Oh, we can't get a plane." That is about the dumbest answer I ever heard, because the congresswoman said, "Let's see the Marines take us out of the presidential palace with bayonets." Well, they knew the program. They took Aristide out because he wanted to do a little bit for the people. And as I always remind everyone, he was not Ernesto Che Guevara. He was raised through the church. His career was through the church. And he wanted to do just a little bit, but just a little bit for the Haitian people was too much for the imperial powers, who are still constantly raping the nation. And of course, we always talk about 9-1-1, and we forget about 9-11 in Chile. Allende, the killing of Allende, the mass murder of Allende, elected by the people. No one said the elections were bad. They just said, "Kissinger, we don't want him." And they killed him, and they killed many in Chile. Nobody doubts that or argues that. We can go quickly to, why are the people at the border, so many people from Honduras? Well, there was a coup in Honduras. And why was there a coup? Because the European and American powers want to take everything from Honduras, and they can't stand a legally elected leader. And the leader said he wanted to do a little bit of social reform for the people. And so they took him out. But the Americans couldn't spell coup. And then we can switch. We can go all over the world. Let's jump to Egypt, where the people in Egypt elected Mohamed Morsi. Where is Mohamed Morsi today? He is in jail. Jailed by an Egyptian general, supported by the Americans. A coup. And so, throughout South America, and all of the countries in South and Central America are under the American fist. And they're taking more and more from their country to make the super rich here at home comfortable. And so, as a young man who worked with me many years ago, when a customer said, "What are you doing here? Why don't you go back home?" And his answer was very straightforward and obvious. He says, "I come here because you came to my country and took everything and brought it here." And he says, "So I have to come here to get it. I'd like a bicycle for my kid. Something simple. But at home, I cannot have it. Only here I can have it." Well, this is naturally what happened. But I guess it started when the conquistadors touched this continent. It was all, there goes the neighborhood. There went the neighborhood. There went the country. There went the continent. And so here we are with a compliant American public. Everybody knows. And this was a discussion Lynn and I had over and over the years. And I said, if the American public understood the vile form of that the American government has taken, what would they do? And Lynn's answer was, they would do what they've always done, enjoy it. Enjoyed slavery 300 years. I mean, that's pretty hard to avoid. Then they enjoyed Jim Crow. Everybody knows about that, but it made a little better for them. And now, today, I'll close with this. There was a spot on Facebook that we're hoping that it will go viral. And it was a young gentleman, a white gentleman, with facts and pictures. He had put it together showing how, in many situations, mass murderers, the murderers of children, white mass murderers who were armed and were captured without firing a shot. Nobody was hurt. And so he lists them, and he has videos to prove it. And then he switches to a young black man with a camera, cell phone, shot 26 times. And who can forget Amadou Diallo with a wallet? And I says, the next thing you know, they're going to have a new name for handguns. If you're black and you have a hand, they thought it was a gun, and will be killed. And so it goes over and over and over again, 100 years since the end of World War I, and nothing has changed. Sent black soldiers to be killed just for the H of it. He knew it meant nothing, but he had that much hate. And we see that much hate today in the army of occupation at home. It has nothing to do with armed struggle. It has to do with being a person of color. And we're going to have to deal with that because, as Ward Churchill says, you don't talk about morality or moral conduct from a society that has no morality. That's what we're looking at. And I say there'll be no changes and no need to negotiate until both sides are hurting. We'll end with that. I've been asked to give the hook. There's so much more to talk about, and if there's much time at the end of the program, I will certainly come back and continue to explain how it works. Patronage, they're paid off. The religious communities, I can't help myself. A telemarketer, evangelist, very famous, was talking about how he was helping in Africa, and they were sending supplies until the pilot got caught with guns, ammunition, take over a country. What are we talking about? Blood diamonds and everything else. Leadership that they wanted to have. And he pled he didn't know. But the pilot was not a dummy. He listed everything that happened. But what happened with the government? Nothing. Because these religious right-wing people are hand in hand with oppression of the rest of the world. They're trying to get there to get theirs before the American government gets there. But I've been given the hook one more time, and so I have to say, Larry Pinckney, are you in the house?
Yes, brother, I certainly am.
We're waiting
for
your word.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Let me, as always, begin by saying free all of our political prisoners. What I'd like to do quickly this evening is to, you know, that for me, the area of political prisoners, black, white, brown, red, yellow, is an extremely, extremely important issue, area, challenge that we must address and deal with. So, having said that, I'd like to refer to one of the articles that I mentioned last week, and the name of the article, it can be found online, is called Pimping the Pain of Political Prisoners in This Bastion of Hypocrisy. Among other things, I wrote about in that article, and the article I believe came out in, well, I'm looking right at it, came out in 2011. I think it's very relevant still today.
Yeah, it is.
It begins with one of the quotes that I truly, truly love is a quote by Bobby Sands.
Mm-hmm.
I hope everyone knows. Well, let me just say, Bobby Sands was a parliamentarian and struggled for the liberation of Irish people, people in specifically Northern Ireland. One of my favorite quotes is from what Bobby said. He said, quote, "Our revenge will be the laughter of our children," unquote.
Yep.
And every time I see it and read it, I feel chills in my body, because isn't that what this struggle was all about? He summed it up in just those few words. Now, in this article, I'm not going to read the article, or certainly not, I'm just going to read a portion, because you always hear me talking about political prisoners. So one of the political prisoners. So I'm going to read this portion, just this portion. What defines being a political prisoner? Mm-hmm. Succinctly stated, political prisoners are those persons who have been imprisoned due to their political views and or conscious political actions, and they consist of men and women of all colors. More often than not, especially in the United States, these persons are charged with, quote, crimes, unquote, which on the surface do not reflect the distinctly political nature of the charges against them. This is practice. And I repeat, this is practice in order to confuse and manipulate the public while simultaneously discrediting and criminalizing those who are charged and imprisoned. Finally, I end this portion by saying, this practice, in effect, criminalizes political dissent under the fallacious guise of protecting society. What a joke. Thus, the judicial system itself is utilized as what? As an institution of political, or an instrument, I should say, an institution of political suppression and repression. I'm going to end right there, because you often hear me talk about the need to free our political prisoners. So I thought I'd just succinctly read from this article what I meant and mean when I say political prisoners. And we have so many in this country, and they must be freed. And they can only be freed by us. We have to understand that at stake is everything. Because as long, I believe it was Sister Betty, and if I'm wrong, I apologize. I believe Sister Betty said a few shows ago, or someone for sure on the panel said, and I loved it how they put it, they, meaning our political prisoners, are in maximum security, while we are in minimum security. Yep. And the point is, we have to do something about it before all of us are behind the fence and the walls in maximum security. So it's not just for our brothers and sisters that we must free them. It's also for ourselves. So I'm going to end there. Thank everyone, as always, on this wonderful show. And I shall be listening. Let me end as I begin. Free our political all power to the people. Thank you.
Thank you so much for that, Larry Pinkney. And to show how much the government does not want to know who the political prisoners are, in 1997, we had a show on commercial radio, $1,500 a half hour. We paid for it weekly. And when we wanted a program, we put it on, Know Your Political Prisoner. We had some ex-political prisoners on. And that was the end of our show. They refused our money. WWRL. And we must always understand, law is a major weapon of the oppressor. Man, with that said, Professor Louis, are you on the line? Are you ready to enlighten us?
Yeah, I'm here, Ralph. Wake up. Levantate, wake up, man. Lost in the steel and cement of New York City, we have got to wake up. Lost in Monday to Friday, endless slavery, selling our precious lives for a few jive little dollars. We have sleep life away in front of TV or internet commercials where white people and black people get along so good, smiley, happy. Does this have any resemblance to the country you actually live in? We have got to wake up. Do not sleep life away in front of TV, soap operas, all happening in fine big houses where no one ever gets laid off, no one gets cut off welfare, no one wakes up in the winter with no heat, no hot water. The Roach is in charge and the landlord in Florida hoping you will move so he can get more rent from the next tenant. We have got to wake up. Do not sleep life away in front of TV or computer watching super cops, super killers, really just super schmucks wasting 11 guys a night with karate chops and automatic firepower. The good guys on these shows are just as nasty as the bad guys. We have got to wake up. Do not sleep life away in front of TV where no one ever gets cheated by the electric company, cheated by the supermarket, cheated by the phone company, cheated by the department store, cheated by the landlord, and cheated by the boss all in the same day. We have got to wake up. Drinking Miller beer will not help you make it with beautiful, expensive women. It will only give you a beer belly and a headache. We have got to wake up. Coca-Cola is not the real thing. It's a cheap chemical poison that eats up your stomach, rots your teeth, and makes scrambled eggs out of your brains. We have got to wake up. You will never own a new Mercedes SUV. If you buy one, you will find it on the street 3 weeks later with the battery ripped off, the radio ripped off, the tires ripped off, the windows broke, the insides burnt out, and you will still have 3 years of payments left to make. We have got to wake up. Do not sleep life away in front of Hollywood fantasy movies. Everyone's so rich and so clean, they never go to work on the number two train in the rush hour. We have got to wake up. Do not sleep life away in front of TV news that says Muslim people in Iran are our enemy and the Exxon oil company is our friend. The Exxon company owns the TV station in the first place. We have got to wake up. Do not sleep life away saying the boss is a good guy because he buys you coffee in the morning. Every single thing he buys is with money that you made for him. We have got to wake up. Do not sleep life away in front of the Bachelor, the 6 o'clock news, the Bachelorette, Donald Trump, Pepsi Cola, Budweiser beer, or the Citibank that never sleeps but stays up all night ripping you off while you sleep. We have got to wake up. We are ripped off, bought off, paid off, laid off, stuffed off, turned off, jerked off more off than on. We are oppressed, depressed, impressed, excess, compressed, and repressed. We are discriminated, medicated, enervated, inundated, overpopulated, masturbated, castrated, incriminated, and incarcerated. We are analyzed, advertised, anesthetized, hypnotized, spiritualized, psychedelicized, polarized, depoliticized, and lobotomized. We must not sleep life away in front of TV or computer dreamland until Tree of Heaven Funeral Homes comes to roll you out to the cemetery in Long Island on the installment plan your family pays later, a real layaway plan. You lay, they pay. We have got to wake up. Yo, man, we are alive. Every day the wind blows the leaves in the tree. Every day the sun lights up the sky. Every night the darkness falls quiet on everything. We are not separate pieces of someone's big money machine. We are all one human family, going back thousands of years, all colors of the rainbow. We have got to wake up. Yo, man, we are alive. The kids play on the kitchen floor. the touch of your sweetheart at night. We were born to breathe clean air, drink fresh water, dance all night without the radio. We were born to move together, to remove forever this money-mad corporate monster robbing and poisoning us every day. We were born to eat the fruit off the trees and the plants from the ground. We were born to respect the old people, to be kind to the children, to respect the earth we walk on. We were born to make a brand new world for the babies, to share what we have all day long and love all night deep into the midnight hour. But first of all, from the get-go, number one, from Jump Street, in the beginning, before anything else, we have got to wake up.
Wake up. All righty, Professor Louie. That's the whole ball of wax. That's what we're trying
to yeah.
All righty. Next up, we have Sister Ann Lamb, New York Jericho and the Spirit of Nelson Mandela. Ann, what do you have for us this evening?
Oh, I actually have some very upsetting news. Friend, Sister Joy Powell, she was attacked yesterday by two younger white women prisoners, both about 30 years old. She defended herself. And now she and they are all in Keep Lock, and they're all in Keep Lock on the same tier, which is interesting.
Oh.
So the people who attacked Joyce get punished, and she, who was attacked, get punished. And she says, you know, if it had been in reverse and it was two younger black women attacking an older white woman, then two younger black women would be in the shoe, right?
Yes.
Solitary confinement in the hole, okay? So this just happened yesterday. I didn't get to speak with her myself. Another friend of ours, a longtime supporter of hers, called me to give me this news, and I was like, oh, this is awful. We'll definitely let people know about it. You know, in addition to everything else she still has going on, the fact that she cannot go to a law library, the fact that all her documents have been confiscated. Now, they have not been destroyed. They are still there, thanks to Maura Meltzer-Cohen, one of our attorneys who called up. But she has not seen them, and they have not been returned to her. So in addition to all that, now she's in Keep Lock. And with this on the same tier with the two women who attacked her. So this is not this is really a bad situation. So people go to jerichoNY.org. All the information is there, starting from the beginning with, you know, her being banned from the law library. She still has a pending court case March 15th. I don't know. I hope she got her paperwork in before. But anyway, people, please call Bedford Hills 914-241-3100. That's 914-241-3100. You can ask to speak to the superintendent. That probably won't happen. But you can
try anyway.
And be firm. And just let them know we are demanding that Joyce Powell be released back into general population, since she did not instigate this incident. And people can also call Docs Commissioner Annucci up in Albany at 518-457-8126 with the same demand. Now, if you want to be a little bit more in-depth about it, you could talk to these people about all three of these things. The fact that she's been banned from the law library arbitrarily because she called out the CO in charge of the law library for sexually harassing the women. All right?
The fact that
her legal documents have been taken away from her, even though she has a current case pending in court. Court date is March 15th, all right? And there's a couple other people there you can get in touch with as well. But, you know, it's really urgent because it's clearly targeting Joy, you know, and one of the reasons they're targeting Joy, or Joyce Powell, she's really named Joyce. They called her Joy, but her name is Joyce. Joyce Powell is always standing up, not only for herself, but for the other women. She's very popular at Bedford, I can tell you, having visited her. You know, all the people come up, say, hi, Joy, how you doing, you know. So, you know, that's because she, you know, she will stand up for the other women. Now, she could just sit there and keep her mouth shut and stay out of trouble, but that's not the person she is, right? So it's really important that people make these phone calls. There's also an email there for Annucci. Wouldn't hurt. I would suggest calling better because, you know, they get a little perturbed when you start, you know, hanging on their phone lines like that, and they're like, uh-oh, why are all these people calling? What's going on? You know, we really need to do this. It's really serious. You know, she's clearly being targeted. The two women who attacked her, I don't know who they are. As I say, didn't get a chance to speak with her directly. Luckily, she was able to get a call out to her friend Joseph Jordan. And then that's very serious. And then another thing that we have going on is Leonard Peltier was arbitrarily denied his transfer, right, to FCI Oxford in Wisconsin. And he's quite upset about it, I heard from Paulette Doté. So in addition to that, and I think I already reported on this before, but we are still doing it, he was suddenly assigned a cellmate. Now, the last time that Leonard was assigned a cellmate in a different prison many moons ago, he got in trouble because his cellmate had done something with the wiring to the light. I mean, it was some, I don't know what it was, but he did something with the wiring to the light, and some CO came into the cell and got like a minor shock. I mean, you're only talking about 110 here, come on. You know, but anyway, got some minor shock, and then Leonard got the hit for, you know, having something in the cell that shouldn't have been that way, even though he had nothing to do with it. So this goes on all the time. So in addition to having his, you know, his move be denied, which I have to update here on the website, he has been assigned this cellmate. So there's three different emails that people can write to. Once again, it's right on JerichoNY.org, right on the front page. Just scroll down. You'll see it there. Please make those, send those emails in about the cellmate, because he has been negatively affected by the actions of cellmates, right? That's when he was in Lewisburg, he was transferred to Coleman for contraband that he had nothing to do with. And the so-called contraband was this short in the wiring some way, you know, somehow his fault. So there's a little, you know, a little small thing there you can use and just, you know, put it in there and say, listen, you know, could you please, like, let Leonard have his own cell? So that's also important. So, you know, those are two things I can talk about right away that are, you know, extremely urgent and really require that we are here, you know, out here in minimum security, as we all do say, have to really watch our friends who are in max and who are suffering a lot more than we are. And we really need to step it up and make those calls and send those emails, because we, the people, free political prisoners. Nobody frees political prisoners but us. You know, if we demand enough, we will free everybody. And we, the people, must stand together and we must make these demands. It has to happen. Otherwise, you know, we have too many people that we've already lost on the inside. We don't want to lose anybody else in there. We really don't. I would hate to see Paul Leonard, after all these years in prison, die in prison. He's an innocent man. He never committed that crime. And Joy is equally an innocent woman. She is trying to overturn her unlawful conviction. So, you know, this is really serious stuff here, folk. Because any one of us could be us tomorrow. You know? Any one of us.
Well,
so.
Well, thank you so much for that. We put it on our various websites and emails so that people can get moving on that. But remember, it is already up on New York Jericho.
JerichoNY.org. So you can just go there and copy and paste if you're sending it out to your listservs and stuff. You know, go up to JerichoNY.org, just copy those couple of things. Actually, Leonard is right below Joy, so you can grab them both in the same in the same fell swoop. You know, it's just text. You can copy it and paste it right into an email and send it out. Or post
Thank
to Facebook
you so
or, you know, Twitter or anything else.
Thank you
right?
so much for that. We
Thank
will
you,
do that.
I know
okay.
you will.
Next.
Let's make sure everybody does. Everybody who's listening to this radio station, make those phone calls, send those emails.
Very important. It does matter when they
It makes
get
a big difference. We have saved people's lives with these campaigns. I swear to you that Robert Zepes would not be out in Buffalo right now if it weren't for all the campaigns we ran over the years to keep him alive. And he says exactly the same thing.
So many others. Lynn Stewart
many
used
others.
To
Yep.
No, made all of it in the world. So we have to make a difference. That's one of the things that we can do. All right. Gwen Goodwin, your mic is open.
Hi, everybody.
How you?
I don't have. Hello. It's good to hear everybody speak. For me this week, what I've been worried about is this 5G network coming into New York. This is supposed to be very, very carcinogenic. It's supposed to speed up your connection to your phone by, like, you know, 3 seconds or something. in order to do this, where they used to put one tower, they're now going to have to put 50 little towers. And these are what's really terrifying about this is the federal government has allowed the private corporation that's going to be doing these installations to go anywhere they choose in any city. And no city or town can override where the location is going to be. So you can't do anything about it. I can't do anything about it. The city of New York can't do anything about it because the federal government has mandated this. And on so many levels, this is troubling. This looks to me a lot like an eminent domain case. You know, that's also federal. And with this product, we are talking about enormous levels of radiation. And so I have been asked to speak to the person I ran against for city council about this, and I haven't really been sure about whether or not I think that would do any good. It is in the hands, I hear, at least on one level of the city council. So I just want to put that out there because I do think that this is going to be it's a sweeping change. It's another sweeping change from the Trump administration, and just being living under him is been a daily, you know, nervous breakdown to be living under him because you just don't know what he's going to do the next day. I've also noticed on Facebook recently, so many people are killing these huge animals in Africa, like giraffes and lions. And giraffes and lions are both endangered species. And what I find the most troubling is that women are doing it. And I ask myself, how insecure could you be about who you are that you got to go chase down some innocent animal and kill it for no reason other than just to kill it? So
no, it's all about money.
Actually, it may be about money. There's somebody that gets paid to allow that to happen. But these women are doing it, and they're being driven for something more because they're the payer, not the payee. They're not the person getting the money. So they're doing it for sport, they're doing it to make a statement. And what kind of woman makes a statement like that? I don't know. But if this to me is not the way up any ladder. This is not a way of showing that you're liberated. And I find it really troubling on all levels because – the planet has such a depletion of these beautiful animals now.
Yeah.
And just for fun, just for the hell of it, we're going to go kill these animals. And I guess I was listening to somebody speak last week on the radio saying that this is the way things are happening right now are very typical for the crisis that we're actually in. And when things come unglued like this, it's just symptomatic of what crisis we're in, where our government is concerned. It is towering over itself. It's falling on itself. We don't have a lot of places to go because right now, you know, China is going to be the number one power in the world, and America is not taking this easily. And we're going to go and try to start a war with Venezuela. There is a protest on the 16th. Very sorry. Really, I am sorry because this is near and dear to my heart, but I cannot go. I have to go and I'm going to my parents' house. But if anybody can go in this group, I hope you will go because this war with Venezuela or this threat to Venezuela is pivotal to the survival of the United States because what happens after Venezuela is John Bolton is calling for us to then attack Cuba. If you think Russia is going to sit by and allow us to attack Cuba, I don't think so. And there goes World War III. And what a stupid ass thing to do.
It's very interesting. I made a mistake. I didn't realize you were talking about women hunters.
Yes, women hunters.
That is a serious issue. But we're going to have to let it go at that and get
to
Tom's hair.
Things for those women to hunt.
Yeah. Well said, Anne. Very well said. Tom Syracuse, your mic is open.
Thank you very much. I just want to say about the need of capitalism to to maintain itself through imperialism.
Yep.
And this, the United States is a prime example. From the time this country achieved its independence, our government has broken treaties, waged wars, engaged in genocide against the indigenous nations in North America. And but even before independence, it forcibly shipped millions of Africans into the colonies in order to make profits for the system. Now, as early as 1823, President James Monroe declared that no colonization in the Americas would be tolerated, and that the Western Hemisphere would be a sphere of influence of the United States. At the time, Great Britain had the largest colonial empire in the Americas, as Spain had lost most of its colonies. This policy has been known as the Monroe Doctrine, and the Trump administration is citing this policy for its imperialism in Venezuela. By 1846, the United States had manipulated Mexico into a war, and upon winning, forced Mexico into ceding its northern provinces, half of its national territory, which included Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, California, Nevada, Utah, and Colorado. And then in 1862, the United States, involved in a civil war, was not able to enforce the Monroe Doctrine when France installed a puppet, the puppet Maximilian, brother of the Emperor of Austria, as Emperor of Mexico. The Mexicans themselves, led by Benito Juarez, revolted and executed Maximilian in 1867. Then after the Civil War in 1898, the United States declared war on Spain. By then, a weak, second-rate power enforced Spain to cede its few remaining colonies, Puerto Rico, the Philippines, and Guam, and made Cuba a dependent state. And that same year, the United States overthrew the native government of Hawaii and made those islands a U.S. territory. So by 1900, the United States joined the exclusive club of overseas colonial powers. Soon afterwards, failing in negotiations with Colombia over building a canal through the Colombian province of Panama, President Theodore Roosevelt helped organize a successful independence revolt in that Colombian province in 1903. And this enabled the United States to occupy and control a canal zone that split the new nation of Panama, connecting the Pacific and Atlantic Oceans, greatly enhanced U.S. power internationally. The canal opened in 1914. Well, the list of U.S. coups and military invasions have been endless throughout the 20th century up to today. After World War II, the United States emerged as the world's most powerful capitalist power and installed puppet regimes in the former European colonies. In Latin America, the United States organized coups or military invasions. This is after World War II. In Colombia, Guatemala, Panama, Venezuela, Nicaragua, Honduras, El Salvador, Bolivia, Peru, Chile, Uruguay, Argentina, Paraguay, Haiti, Grenada, Cuba, the Dominican Republic, and now again in Venezuela. The number of military bases and facilities in Latin America have steadily increased. The big one is in Cuba. And by the way, this Guantanamo base, that was a treaty with Cuba that expired in 1900. In the year 2000. The treaty was for 100 years. Well, we're still there. The Dutch West Indies now has Curaçao and Aruba has American bases. There are American bases in Panama, Honduras, El Salvador, Colombia, and Peru. There are talks to create an offensive capability against Venezuela and Bolivia by the neighboring countries of Colombia, Peru, and Brazil, right now controlled by conservative governments. However, despite all of this, the fact of the matter is that the United States is no longer the unchallenged superpower of the world. Competitive capitalist powers such as China, Russia, Germany, the United Kingdom, and Japan engage in imperialist interventions to gain spheres of influence in their need for new markets, natural resources, and cheap labor. However, capitalism's inner contradictions, such as making increased profit paramount, leading to overproduction, unemployment, and its inability to solve an impending environmental disaster are causing insoluble crises and a resurgence of working-class militancy both in the United States and overseas.
That's good. So much for that, Tom. I should have interrupted to say that we've extended the program for another half hour because there's so much information being spread. So are you finished? And Belinda Brown, Joel, Gil, we're going to have time to put you on. So we're going to be here another half hour.
Sister, we want to announce to our audience, this is the guest we're hoping to include. And Joel and Gil, we've got to have your report, so we extended the time so that we could get you in. But we want to get in our sister from New Orleans to talk about upcoming Angola. Sister Belinda, your mic is open.
Great. We might have to get you on the radio. Why don't you find out as much as you can about it? Then that way we can talk to educate the people.
Sure. Sister Belinda.
Hello.
Sister Belinda, your mic is open.
Okay.
We extended another half hour.
Okay.
So take your time.
Okay.
Sounds
great.
Okay, Sister Belinda from New Orleans, Sister Brown, we need you to start now.
Bob, the meeting starts at 6 o'clock. I guess you kind of
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Hi. 4400. Hello.
Hi. This is Lloyd Kelly from New Orleans. I'm with Belinda Parker Brown this afternoon. How are you?
Oh, fine. Thank you.
Go ahead.
We are so delighted to have your call. For some reason, her call dropped, but when she calls back in, we'll have her on along with you. Would you please extend the information to the New York City audience?
First, let me say thank you for having us on tonight. What we're dealing with down here is Louisiana United International, which is an organization Belinda Parker Brown founded several years ago. So far, she's been able to send a county prosecutor to prison. She's been able to send a county coroner to prison, and the sheriff is on his way.
Thank you, Belinda.
Continue. One day, one day y'all should do a whole show on that story, what she was able to do in those situations. Now what we're working on is a campaign called Unanimous Is Not Enough. And what that's a reference to is that up until January 1st of this year, the state of Louisiana was one of two states that allowed for a person to be convicted of a felony with a split jury verdict, meaning that out of the 12 people, you only needed 10 votes to convict. And that law was crafted right after Reconstruction so that black people would be put into prison and they would be able to use the exception to the 13th Amendment for free labor to rebuild railroads, to rebuild the South, basically. And it carried all the way up until January 1st of 2019. So we were thrilled that the citizens of the state of Louisiana voted to change our constitution to make a felony conviction require a unanimous jury verdict. But this is the sick part. There are 2,000-plus people in Louisiana prisons that were convicted under a split jury verdict, and they weren't grandfathered into the law. So you have people that are sitting in prison based on a law that we know was that was crafted by a group called the Redeemers post Reconstruction, simply to put black people into prison. And our new law says that on January 1, 2019, it was racist and unconstitutional, but on December 31st, 2018, it wasn't. So we've come up with this campaign called Unanimous Is Not Enough, and what it's meant to do is to get freedom or retrials for all 2,000-plus people that are affected by this.
Right on. Right on.
So,
well, I hope...
Is this draft...
Belinda.
Belinda speaking. Mr. Kelly just laid that out real well, and he's done a fantastic job bringing everybody up to speed. But one of the things that I am so excited about is that it's Ralph and Betty, it's people coming from all over to stand with us. And we're so looking forward to you guys. I'm so excited that you're coming to Louisiana, a comrade, a real soldier in the trenches, know how to fight. And that's what we need, Ralph. That's what we need, buddy. And I am so, you know, Pastor Pinckney is going to be here, and I know it's going down when he gets here. So
I'm so looking forward to meeting all of you and doing our work. I'm so looking forward to meeting all of you in person and doing our work to make people understand what's at stake and make people understand we can do something about it. My introduction way back in the early days was with the next Garveyite, Queen Mother Moore, and she talked about Louisiana and Angola prison. And I'm happy to be dealing with that again. Too bad it wasn't handled many years before. But thanks again for being on. And we will do a program totally on this. But you'll have to tell us when, and we'll work it in.
Does the Pauline's want to add some more comments and some more detail?
What you need, Betty? What you need?
I'm wondering if the brother from New Orleans wanted to add some more comments. I don't want to feel that we cut him off.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Laura.
I just want to follow up and say that we look very forward to doing an entire show about what's going on here down in Louisiana, because I have a story to tell about something I was involved in that I promise you, you will not believe it. I promise you will not believe it. So
I promise you, we will do that program. Okay, stay on, because I'm going to go back to
Brother Joel. Brother Joel, we're going to open up your mic. And Brother Tom, I think we cut you off a little bit because we saw that the people from New Orleans had called in. And we wanted to make sure that they knew the mics were open. So, Joel, Tom, and Gail, your mics are open. As a matter of fact, all of the mics are open. We hope everybody, if you want to respond to our sisters and brothers from New Orleans, please feel free to do so. And, Mr. And, did I hear you?
Oh, this is Tom.
I'm still
okay.
Here.
Please. Tom.
I'd like to say a few words about Venezuela.
Go ahead.
Is that okay?
Yes, it is.
You know, this country used to claim that it supports democratically elected governments and the right of colonized people to determine their own destinies. However, when their governments exert some independence from the United States, then this government engineers coups or outright invasions to overthrow those governments. And this is especially true of those governments that possess valuable resources, such as oil. Do you know that Venezuela has the largest reserve of oil in the world?
Yes.
And before it nationalized its oil, the oil industry was controlled by ExxonMobil, ConocoPhillips, and Chevron, among other companies. However, the Venezuelan economy has depended mostly on its oil revenues, which are subject to extreme fluctuations in the international oil market. And this causes serious economic problems. Since Hugo Chavez, a former colonel in the Venezuelan army, was elected in 1999, the Venezuelan oligarchy, supported, of course, by this government, has tried to overthrow the Venezuelan government. Both Chavez and his successor, Nicolas Maduro, have espoused socialism, oh my God, and have used much of the revenues from oil on social programs that benefit the poor. Now, Trump has announced that he will not tolerate socialism in Latin America, but he uses now the rationale this Monroe Doctrine. So far, however, most of the Venezuelan working class in the military have supported Chavez and Maduro, and taking advantage of a glut of oil on the world's oil market and reduced revenues from the sale of oil, the Trump administration announced it will put an embargo on Venezuelan oil. And this will cause, of course, further suffering and political problems in Venezuela. Trump is supporting the leader of the oligarchy's opposition party. His name is Juan Guaido. He's a person who was never elected. It does not matter to the United States that Chavez and his successor, Maduro, were elected by the majority of the Venezuelan people. Recently, a drone was flown into Venezuela in an attempt to assassinate President Maduro. And now Trump is trying to get Venezuela's neighbors, Brazil, Colombia, and Peru, all of which are presently friendly to the United States, to organize an invasion of Venezuela. So why doesn't the Democratic leadership in this country introduce a resolution in Congress condemning this bold-faced violation of international law and of treaties that we have signed with the UN? Well, the answer is obvious. Both corporate parties support U.S. imperialism. And so, this is what we have. The only thing that can end this, I believe, is that it has to come from the American people itself. But most Americans don't know anything about this history, and that's the big challenge that we have, like this blog, to try to get people to understand our history. Thank you.
All right.
So much, Tom. It's very educational. People have to understand that. But I would like to include that those Democratic politicians, the new progressive Democratic politicians who first said, do not invade Venezuela, have all turned, changed their mind. So much for the election of progressive people. And over the years, we've already known that capitalism doesn't work. Imperialism does have an army.
I want to call out both parallels between how the Democratic Party deserts the people of Venezuela and how the Democratic Party deserts black people in the South. And that's one of the reasons why we are in solidarity with this struggle to free these 2,000 political prisoners, because they are now political prisoners. Their government even passed legislation saying they should be free, and yet they're still enslaved. And that's why we appreciate our sister and brother from New Orleans for waging this war. And we certainly hope that they will be back on to tell us how they got rid of, what did you say? You put an attorney in jail? Who else did you say you put in jail? She put in jail?
A district attorney, the lead district attorney,
DA,
All right.
Okay. Doing great work
out of office here. And also the corner, the three most powerful people in your community. The one that can determine whether or not you're dead or alive. The other one can put you in jail for whatever reason you want to. And then the other one that can prosecute you and put you in prison for life.
Well, great. I remember hearing about this on Reverend Pinckney's program, and I repeat, I do look so forward to being there this Friday and working with you to get work done.
One of the things Queen Mother Moore used to try to make people understand is that in America, we are the colony. We are the third colony in America, and they treat us the same contempt that they are treating the people of Venezuela. The people of Yemen, that they are treating the people in Haiti. We are their colony. So they
think.
Barry,
That's right.
Belinda.
Yeah, you know, I want to say that, you know, there's so much going on in our world today, but I really feel strongly that with you guys coming down here to Louisiana to stand with us in regards to the unanimous is not enough, how we're going to expose this, you know, corrupt, racist, Jim Crow laws and unconstitutional laws that have oppressed the people for over, you know, 400 years. And my concern is that, you know, this is something that I know, you know, I know, Ralph, I know you pick your battles carefully. And this is one that I know that we can get the, you know, we are, you know, are not going to stop this fight until they get it right.
Right.
We can basically help so many people, you know, so many people that have been oppressed and, you know, and get the victory. We can win this one. I know for a fact that we
can
win. And, you know, and we're going to win. We're going to win.
All right.
The victor would come home and he would be a very instrumental piece and how we're going to take this thing to another whole level when it comes to how they have, you know, lynched us in the courtroom.
Right.
Okay, the judge is now.
Can I jump in there real quick? Let me just say this. When you hear Errol and Tanya Victor's story, you will just cry. It is so disgusting. And I look forward to coming on your show to talk about that case, because what happened was just, you can't believe it. You just won't believe it.
Okay, we'll look forward
to
hearing it.
I'd like to jump in here, too. Speaking of Louisiana and all these places, Albert Woodfox, as many of you know, one of the Angola Three, who spent 40-plus years in solitary confinement, is having a book tour. And he'll be in all kinds of places. He'll be in Tucson. He'll be in New Orleans March 20th at the New Orleans Public Library, 219 Loyola Avenue, with his book, which is called Solitary. He'll be in D.C. He'll be in Philadelphia. He'll be in Brooklyn, New York, March 27th at the Public Library at Grand Army Plaza. He'll also be in Long Island City on March 28th. He'll be in Princeton, New Jersey on April 17th. So I'm just putting this up on jerichony.org, so feel free to check it out, folks. It sounds like it's a fantastic book. The New York Times gave it an amazing review. So, you know, and it's a great chance to see Albert, who is, like, amazing.
Wow. Well,
so much for
that. I am excited to hear that.
So
want to
thank Anne, because Anne,
we were
supporters
of the
put out the announcement about this upcoming
Yes,
court
you did.
Day.
Yeah. And we've been putting it out, too. You know, we put it out on the Jericho listserv so people know about it. You know, it's been posted on Facebook and so on, social media.
Yes.
So, you know, we might not be able to get there ourselves, but we'll certainly make sure that people know about it, and hopefully they will respond, you know, because it's really important. I mean, I was appalled to hear that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm very familiar with that, been a great supporter of it, and we're excited about the fact that that book is very powerful, it's very informative, and the information in that book can literally change the world if people would just read it and listen to this man's story and how that was a tragedy. It was, worse than what you can even think of. Imagine how these people suffered there.
Yep.
Yes, when
I went to the funeral.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, go ahead.
Out too.
After
went
to. Out, the most amazing thing is you spent all of these years, you know, in solitary, but it hasn't affected your mind, and
no.
It's so we have to continue supporting him, but we have to move on. And I would like to remind people that the coup against Chavez, and there was a coup,
totally unsuccessful.
Ordered by armed people of Venezuela. And it must be reminded again that Chavez was of indigenous heritage.
Yes, he was.
And not only was he a socialist, not only did he go to Fidel for information and support, but he was of indigenous heritage, which upset the apple cart because Europeans organized the world according to color. But I will get off and next go to Joe Myers.
And Jill, we want you to hang in there, okay? You can
hear
me.
Yes, can you hear me? Yes, can you hear me?
Yes,
hello?
We can. Yes, Joe,
okay.
We can hear you.
Yes, I want to remind people we've been talking about Venezuela in general and about the U.S. Attacking Venezuela in general, but the thing is that there's been an electrical blackout of the entire country that has gone on. Maybe I haven't heard the latest news, but as far as I know, this would be the sixth day, the sixth full day of zero electricity in the entire country. And this is causing tremendous hardship because it means that, you know, Venezuela is a very warm, humid country. It means there's no refrigeration in Venezuela, that a lot of the food is spoiling and rotting. It means that the hospitals, for example, all the dialysis machines were shut down, even right in the middle of people getting their procedures. And this is causing, again, tremendous hardship. And it's aimed directly at the people. You know, now I want to say that all this is done in the name of democracy, right? Now,
right.
Venezuela is a very unique area because the people, the leadership in Venezuela have tried to, as much as possible, combine a development, not even a full socialism where many things are nationalized. They did nationalize the oil industry, but they've tried to maintain a mixed economy wherever it's practical. And they practice democracy down there in combination with that. A democratic republic that is so democratic. Could you think of another country? Hello?
Yeah.
We're here. We're
another,
we can hear you.
Another, I got a weird beep here. Another country where where somebody who has no political history at all suddenly proclaims himself with the support of foreign countries to be the real president, and he's organizing a so-called a phony cabinet, and he's meeting with ambassadors of other imperialist countries and imperialist aligned countries, and he's allowed to organize marches, demonstrations. I mean, this is like a total abuse of any democratic rules, and it goes further than what's required of any democratic republic, and yet these people have complete freedom, and they're complaining that the Maduro government is somehow repressive, it's a dictatorship, and so on. And these people are proclaiming themselves to be the real government after losing every election that was ever held there. And both elections were supervised by the Jimmy Carter forces and the UN and many other, even the countries that have whose governments have condemned the legitimate government of Venezuela, the elected government, all of them had roles in supervising the elections that had been held there, and they couldn't find anything wrong with them. And yet this is what they're organizing, outright treason within the country. And even though they're being left alone for that treason, they're claiming that they don't have any freedom there. I mean, what are they and can't people see this? Even people that are as brainwashed as from the United States, I would think a lot of people here can see it. And in terms of the whole thing about the failure of socialism, they never nationalized all the industries or anything like that. They made certain reforms where they distributed some of the income. You know, and capitalism is like a casino where the house always wins. And the only mitigation of that could be, if you're going to maintain capitalism, guarantee material necessities to the poor, the exploited, and the oppressed. And this is far short of socialism, and they're going after even those reforms, which in the context, what you have there is a failure of capitalism. Because even with those reforms, the system was not adequately working, and the upper class in alliance with imperialism is in a revolt just over those reforms that allowed people to escape starvation and illiteracy, I want to say also we should pay attention to another international conference that was held in the name of making war against another country, and that is a European conference that was held at the behest of the Israelis, in which Vice President Pence participated, and they're calling for war against Iran. And it just goes by. Nobody realizes how outrageous this is, that they don't even have a provocation to wave a bloody shirt over or anything, and yet they're calling for outright war against Iran, and this involves several countries. So far, I think, outside of the U.S. and the Israelis, the other countries have sent some message that they're not really into it, but they did participate in the conference, and it bears watching because the Middle East is still the powder keg that also can unite World War III, can ignite World War III at almost any given moment because of the extreme situation provoked by the Israeli apartheid state there. So
okay.
Thank you so much for that
because that is a complete picture of American foreign policy. And
But what happened in Little Rock, one man told everybody integrating. If you saw Little Rock, Arkansas, you can't be surprised at anything that's done in the rest of the world.
I just want to say also that they use the aftermath of that conflict now to try to pressure Germany into sailing its navy into the Azov Sea, which is a violation of the Russian space over the Ukraine. Another thing that could easily provoke a major confrontation with Russia.
Thank you again for that, Joel. That gives us a complete picture, and we're going to switch to Gil Obler. Gil, your mic is open.
Brother Gil is the representative for Mamia Abu Jamal, who, as you know, is one of our long-term political prisoners and a struggler for human rights. And again, we want to thank the people of New Orleans for calling in, and we definitely hope you will call back in again and be our special guest. Brother Gil.
I'm going to get to Mumia in a moment, but I wanted to respond to some of the things that happened in the show today first. So first of all, you know, I've told the story before, but so I'm not going to repeat it today about my friend in Baton Rouge who was caught shoplifting and is 25 years later is still in prison as a teenager.
Wow.
She was caught shoplifting. And I also told the story while I was there of a Japanese exchange student who, despite this law that allows people to be convicted with less than a full jury.
10-2 rule.
Who was shot in the back on Halloween. But I'll tell you another story from back then. I was working in Baton Rouge, but I had to go to New Orleans. And I was in a rush, so I admit I was driving 5 miles over the speed limit. And forgive me, it's been 20 or 25 years, but I think it was Jefferson Parish, but I don't remember exactly. But I was coming to where you get to Lake Pontchartrain on the way to New Orleans. And I was 5 miles over the speed limit. I'm a white guy, you know. You know, times 10 if I were a black person. But I was stopped, and, you know, instead of just getting a ticket, the guy took my license.
Wow.
It's standard practice down there. And, you know, I had a little scribble thing telling me where to go. I had to cancel my trip to New Orleans and spend half a day finding the courthouse in, you know, way off the road. This was in the days before smartphones and Google Maps. So I had to figure out where the heck this place was, you know, in a county that I wasn't familiar with and a parish, I should say, that I wasn't familiar with. to find my license and get back and pay the fee for a 5 mile above the speed limit ticket just to get my license back. And by the way, in doing all that, I had to drive illegally basically without a license. So God forbid I got stopped again. I probably would have been locked up in jail, especially if I were black, for driving without a license just to get my license back. Right. So that's what things were like in Louisiana, and people who aren't used to that, myself included, since I grew up here in New York, you need to understand what it's really like down there, you know, for white people, let alone for black people or Native indigenous peoples.
Thank you for that.
This question about Venezuela, I mean, I agree with everything that's been said, but my perspective is a little different. As we learned at the All Diamonds Are Blood Diamonds event that we recently had and talked about on this show, you know, the political lines in Africa you know, they're not real. They were created by the colonial powers, the European colonial powers, and the same goes for so-called Latin America. The lines on the map were basically created by the colonial powers. The oligarchs in those countries are all of Spanish or Portuguese descent, and they rule over the indigenous people. So, you know, we talked about, you know, whatever it is, 60 interventions since 1870, but really the colonial powers have never left.
Right.
And so, you know, that's why, for instance, the African People's Socialist Party supports African internationalism, and the Bolivarians support Pan-Americanism. Because we aren't going to get out. I mean, recently to malign reparations, Ivanka Trump said that most people don't want a handout. Of course, reparations aren't a handout. but they didn't mind reparations when Haiti was paying reparations to France for over 100 years, reparations for having a slave revolt. So take that with a large grain of salt. And also with regards to Venezuela, I mean, the embargo, the blackout, they stole basically Citgo, which was sending money to the Venezuelan nationalized oil company, and they stole $1 billion of gold from the bank, you know, from the Bank of England. So, you know, repression of the Venezuelan people goes, you know, well beyond. And I don't have the date yet, but we're organizing in sometime towards the end of May at the People's Forum. We're going to have an event with reports from people from Black and Indigenous communities in Palestine, in Israel, in Cuba, in Venezuela, and elsewhere, and hopefully from Haiti as well, and Indigenous people from the United States. So when we have the details, we'll be talking about that on this show. but look out for that. Coming to Mumia, we just sent out our appeal letter through email, our fundraising appeal, and I hope most of people on here on the show got that. But I fear not, actually, because one of the things that we need to do, I've been going through the email. We've been hosted on Yahoo, and first of all, the self-management of that broke several years ago, so the lists are way, way out of date. I've been going through it, just even extracting it, but I've been going through it, and I recognize some of the people, and the emails are way out of date. So we need to get we need to get off that infrastructure. It strips images, it strips attachments out, it sometimes doesn't go out. And of course, people haven't been able to join the list except indirectly for years. So we need to upgrade our infrastructure to reach people. This is a very critical period for Mumia Bujamal. part of the reason we're, trying to be more prepared than we've been. In the past, year and a half, we've been in court, but in each case, we knew what dates we were going to be in court. We often had a month or 2 months lead time to organize buses. In this upcoming period, we don't have any of that certainty. The court dates could come up with, only a couple days notice, hopefully more, but, we don't know when they're going to be. We may have to organize vans, buses, depending on how many people we can get. But we need to really upgrade our infrastructure to be prepared to get people out on the street. This is maybe our last chance to get a real reexamination of his conviction. We're going to be operating under, much less certainty about the dates. One date that people can save the date in advance, we know around his birthday, his birthday is the 24th, so the following Saturday, the 27th of April, we're definitely going to have major demonstrations in Philadelphia, and we'll be announcing that a bus, or hopefully more than one bus, to go down that morning.
Okay, thank you so much for that, Gil. And, you know, in Venezuela, there was a cyber attack. And Chairman O'Malley Yeshitelli is also going to be in New Orleans of the African People's Socialist Party. Good night, folks. Thank you so much for
listening.
Good
night, good night, good night.
Good night. Thanks for having us.
Oh.
Thank you. New Orleans will